Good morning and welcome to the Health Matters Radio Show. It's Monday, it's the 28th of January. I can't believe that January has almost gone. And it's me, it's Neil De Silva. I'm your host today and this is show 50. I can't believe we've hit half a century already. The time has gone so quick and there's been so many great guests and so much useful information that's come through the show over those 50 shows. And talking about great guests, I have another great guest on with me this morning. I have Sue Lee from Sue Lee Hypnotherapy. Good morning, Sue. How are you?
Good morning, Neil. I'm absolutely fine, thank you.
It's great to have you on the show. And interestingly, on the other side of the desk as well, because
yes.
Normally you co-host a show, don't you, on Channel Radio?
Yes, I do, once a month on a Monday night. So it feels really weird sitting
with Linda Cloak, 7 o'clock to 8 o'clock on
a
Monday.
Right, yeah.
So it's really great to have you on the show. And we're going to find out more about what Sue does in about 20 minutes or so. So on today's show, we are going to be talking about processed foods and how bad they are for your health. It's an obvious one, I know, but actually I'm going to go through some detail about why processed food is not good for you. We're also going to cover mindful eating. Now, we covered some aspects of mindful eating last week, and we're just going to carry on that discussion towards the end of the show. So a quick disclaimer before we start. The purpose of the Health Matters Radio Show is to provide you with competent information on the subject matters covered and to help educate and inform you in ways that you could improve your own health. However, this is on the understanding that I am not engaged in providing medical advice and the content in the show should not be treated as a substitute for such. If you have any concerns about your general health or you require medical or other expert assistance, please speak to a suitably qualified healthcare professional, which in many cases can be obtained by dialing 111. All the content is provided for general information only, and I encourage you to do your own research on the topics that we discuss. And the show is based on my knowledge, my research, my experience and offer my opinion, and I disclaim any liability that is incurred from the use of or application of the content of the show. If you would like to get in touch with the show's Twitter feed is at Health Radio Show. On Facebook, you can search The Health Matters Radio Show and you can follow the show's Facebook page there and you can like it and comment, you know, whatever you want to do. You can also listen again to this show and all previous 49 shows at the media page, on the media page of my website, which is www.i-nutrition.co.uk. And you can also find the show's podcast on iTunes. Go to iTunes, search the Health Matters Radio Show, and you can also subscribe there as well. So when I update the latest shows, you will get a notification. If you'd like to contact me privately, and not through social media, then you can do so through the contact page of my website, which again is www.i-nutrition.co.uk. So, on to processed foods. Now, we know that processed foods are not particularly good for us. And I'd argue, actually, in many cases, they're actually detrimental to our health. But I'd like to talk to you for a few moments about why it is actually so dangerous. So I've got 9 areas regarding processed foods where we need to consider really what we're eating and the effect it's having, not just on our physical well-being, but also on our mental and our psychological well-being as well. So I've got 9 ways, and we're going to discuss the first 4 this week because there's just too much to go through, and we're going to discuss the other 5 on next week's show. So when we talk about processed foods, what do we mean? Okay, so processed foods generally have multiple ingredients in them, and they tend to have things added to them. So whether that's natural additives or artificial additives or chemicals. So really it's food that's not in its natural form. So one of the biggest areas that is a problem with processed foods is sugar. Now, lots of people will say, well, I don't add sugar to my coffee or my tea or my cereal or whatever it is. But actually, it's estimated that around 80% of all food in supermarkets has sugar already added to it. Now, those of you that know me will know that I'm on a bit of a mission at the moment to educate children in junior schools about the dangers of sugar. So if any of you out there have got contacts with school governors or head teachers and like me to go and talk to children between 7 and 10 year old about sugar, then you know, give me a shout, contact me via my website. So sugar is a big problem, and there is its evil twin, which is high fructose corn syrup, which arguably is even worse than sugar. Now, it's well documented, and there's so much research that has proven that when sugar is consumed in excess, it is seriously harmful to the body. So sugar is empty calories, has no essential nutrients. But the empty calories are really just the tip of the iceberg, because sugar actually has a devastating effect on our metabolism. It can also lead to things like insulin resistance, which is the precursor to type 2 diabetes, high triglycerides, which again can lead to things like high cholesterol. And there are some links with fat accumulation around the abdominal cavity, which is visceral fat, fat accumulation in the liver. And there is a big connection between excess sugar consumption and heart disease, obesity and cancer. So bear in mind that it's not just about the sugar that you add to your food. It's a sugar that's already in your food. I'm going to come on to a reason why sugar is added to your food in a moment. But please look at food labels. If you see sugar in the first 3 or 4 ingredients, it is going to be a major part of that food. My advice would be put it down and choose something more healthy. If you see fructose or high fructose corn syrup or glucose syrup, these are kind of synthetic sugars that are really, really damaging to the body. Again, put it down and choose something else. And if you're adding sugar to teas and coffees, do you know what? A small change, if you just cut down and cut out altogether over a year, over 10 years, you will consume kilograms of less sugar. So, you know, small changes can make a big difference. Processed foods are engineered for overconsumption. So there are 3 different types of food that are addictive to us. The first one, as you would expect, is sweet foods. So sugar. The second is salty, and the third is fatty. Now, food, people don't realise this, is that processed food is scientifically engineered to make us want more. Food companies operate in a very competitive market. They're all vying for what I'd like to call stomach space. And they spend huge amounts of money and throw huge amounts of resources at making their food as desirable as possible. So they engineer it to be rewarding to the brain. So sugar, salt and fat are the 3 key areas that fire off all these hormones in our body, particularly dopamine, makes us feel great. It's why junk food tastes so good and makes us want more. But it really messes up our regulation or our ability to regulate energy balance. So energy balance is how much we eat and how much we burn. And until recently, when you think about it, humans have been around for quite a long time. Our bodies haven't changed that much in all those thousands or tens of thousands or millions of years. But our diet has changed a huge amount in the last 50 years. And it's reckoned that because we're eating so much processed food, that this change in the ability to regulate our energy balance works against us in our ability to keep a healthy weight. And actually, this reward value, you know, this firing off of all these great hormones that make us feel good, it's thought that this can actually bypass our innate defense mechanism, and it can make us start eating much more than we really need. So we lose touch with genuine hunger. And this is called the food reward hypothesis of obesity. So the truth is that processed foods are so incredibly rewarding to our brains that they affect our thoughts and they affect our behavior, and they make us eat more than we need to, than we actually want. And actually it can make us feel quite sick as well. You know, how many times have you sat down and just ate so much that you feel fit to burst? The problem with these foods, these processed foods, particularly the sweet foods, is they block a hormone called leptin. And leptin is the hormone that says you need to stop eating. Sugar gets in the way of that, and it can actually make us eat too much. So bear in mind, as I say, food manufacturers, if you're eating processed foods, it has been scientifically engineered to make you want more of it, switch to proper foods, healthy foods. You know, think back 1,000, 10,000 years. What were we eating back then? We were eating nuts, seeds, berries, fish, meat, vegetables, fruit. We weren't eating foods with multiple multiple ingredients. And talking about ingredients, a lot of processed foods have artificial chemicals added to them. These obviously are not real foods. And actually, if you looked at a food label of a piece of processed food, chances are you probably wouldn't understand what half of the ingredients are and what they do to you. So these processed foods often contain preservatives. So these are chemicals that prevent the food from rotting. They contain colorants, which give the food a specific color. They contain flavors, which will help to give it a particular flavor. And they will contain texturants. And these are chemicals that give the food a particular texture. So the addictiveness of our food is based on taste. It's based on the ability for it to trigger these hormones. It's also based on texture as well. And actually, processed foods can contain dozens of other chemicals that they're not legally obliged to put on the food labels. So, for example, if it's talked about artificial flavour, so artificial flavour is a proprietary blend. Manufacturers don't have to disclose what goes into the artificial flavour. And if it's an artificial flavour, it will normally be a mixture of chemicals. So if you see artificial flavour on the ingredients, then there could be 10 or more additional chemicals blended into that food to give it a flavour that are not even listed on the ingredients list. Of course, food manufacturers would argue, well, these are safe. These have been approved by the respective governments or the food or health authorities in a given country. But these are the same authorities that still consider sugar to be safe and not illegal. They consider things like palm oils and vegetable oils to be safe. So any authority that deems sugar and vegetable oils and palm oil, for example, to be safe, I would argue the sanity of those organisations where they are actually saying that these artificial ingredients are actually safe in our foods as well. And finally, we did touch on it, but junk foods, processed foods are incredibly addictive to the body. They fire off the hypothalamus, dopamine gets produced, it makes us feel good, which is why sugary food, if you have lots of sugary food, you feel great, albeit for a very short time. And it actually fires off these hormones, and these hormones are very addictive. Dopamine is a very addictive hormone. So it makes us addicted to these foods. It makes us want more of them. We lose control over how much food that we eat. And food addiction is actually something that most people don't know much about. We talk about drug addiction, alcohol addiction, tobacco addiction, but people can become addicted to food and not even realise it. And I would argue that this is a really big problem today, not just with things like obesity, but also the onset of type 2 diabetes and certain cancers and heart disease. And there are some links between what we eat and things like dementia as well. So this, you know, this dopamine, it hijacks our brain chemistry, and this hijacking is supported by many studies. So junk food, sugary food in particular, sugar and fat together is a really nice combination. Most people would never eat a kilo of sugar, and they wouldn't eat a block of butter on their own. But you know what? Mix them together and suddenly they taste quite nice. And that addictiveness, that dopamine release, can make certain foods as addictive as class A drugs. So processed foods, just don't do it. Learn to read your food labels, learn to look at the ingredients in the food you're about to purchase, the food you're about to eat. Look for the sugars, look for fats, look for high levels of salt, because if they're in there, then you know that food has been scientifically engineered to make you crave it and to make you want more. So after the break, we're going to have a chat with Sue. Until then, I'll see you in a few minutes. Here's a quick song.
A man walks down the street. He says, why am I soft in the middle now? Why am I soft in the middle? The rest of my life is so hard. I need a photo opportunity. I want a shot of redemption. Don't want to end up a cartoon in a cartoon graveyard. Bone digger, bone digger, dogs in the moonlight. Far away, my well-lit door. Mr. Beer Melly, Beer Melly, get these mutts away from me, you know. I don't find this stuff amusing anymore. If you'll be my bodyguard, I can be your long lost pal. I can call you Betty, Betty, when you call me, you can call me Al. A man walks down the street, he says, why am I short of attention? Got a short little span of attention, and oh, my nights are so long. Where's my wife and family? What if I die here? Who'll be my role model now that my role model is gone, gone? He ducked back down the alley with some roly-poly little bat-faced girl. All along, along, there were incidents and accidents. There were hints and allegations. If you'll be my bodyguard, I can be your long-lost pal. I can call you Betty, and Betty, when you call,
you're listening to the Health Matters Radio Show. It's Monday, the 28th of January, 2019. So I have a few quick shout-outs for people that have contacted the show. If you'd like a shout-out on next week's show, then please just contact me through the show's Facebook page, which is the Health Matters Radio Show. So a quick shout-out for my good friend Duncan Collins from Universal Mind Health. Duncan says, don't wait until it's too late to know you have mental wellness issues. Don't wait in a queue for a pre-diagnostic dementia memory assessment. You're missing out all the help and benefits that you are entitled to. So Universal Mind Health is Duncan's business, and they do an MOT for your mind's health. So if you'd like to contact Duncan, his phone number is 01233 611 725. And you can also, if you go to Facebook and search Universal Mind Health, you'll be able to contact him through his company's Facebook page. Shout out for Mandy Pearson. Hi, Mandy. Mandy runs a business called Church Mouse Baby. The website is churchmousebaby.co.uk. And she does fine handmade nursery soft furnishings. And she also runs craft workshops every Monday night at the Pier Hotel in Greenhithe. two classes, 5 till 7pm and then 7.15 to 9.15pm. If you'd like to contact Mandy, if that sounds of interest to you, then again, her website is churchmousebaby.co.uk. And a shout out for Victoria Sheridan. Now, Victoria came on my show last week and we had a great interview. So do listen back on that show, show 49. And Victoria is running a rehearsed visualization techniques called Up Your Game. It's a proven system of success. And if you'd like to book your session with Victoria, then please contact her by email. Her email address is victoria@thesecretcalm.com. And as I say, she's doing these rehearsed visualization techniques. So on to our guest interview of the morning. We have Sue Lee from Sue Lee Hypnotherapy. Good morning, Sue. How are you this morning? Good
morning, Neil. I'm absolutely fine. Thank you.
It's great to have you on the show.
Thank you very much for having me.
We're going to find out more about what you do. We're going to learn more about hypnotherapy, what it is and what it isn't. But let's start with your background. Where have you come from? What's been your journey? And how did you get into doing what you're doing now?
Right, okay. So years ago, I worked in the city. Before I had my children, it was never my idea to be a therapist. I worked in the city, enjoyed what I did there, and then gave up my children when I was in. I didn't give up my children. Sometimes I feel like I want to give up my children. No, sorry, I gave up my work in the city to have my children.
Yeah.
And was quite happy to sort of stay at home and have the children. Although I did train as a reflexologist.
Okay.
When my eldest one was about two. That was great. I really enjoyed that. And I did that for about 4 or 5, 6 years until my younger son came along.
Mm-hmm.
But then discovered that I had arthritis in my hands, which enabled me to, I had a problem with obviously doing reflexology because it really messed my thumbs up.
Was this rheumatoid?
It was osteo. Okay. Wow. Because I also found out around about the same time I have something called Ehlers-Danlos syndrome,
right,
which is basically a collagen defect and it affects all your joints and eventually you get arthritis.
Okay.
So that sort of put the kibosh on that really. So I thought, right, okay, what can I do? And it wasn't until my children got a little bit older and they were doing their own thing and I thought I really need to get out and exercise the old grey matter and do something. And I sort of looked back to my reflexology days and thought, you know what, I really want to go back into therapy. I love helping people and I love helping people to feel better. What can I do? So a very good friend of mine in Australia, who is a qualified hypnotherapist amongst a lot of other things, said to me, you'd make a really good hypnotherapist. She probably said that because she knows how good I am at talking. So if it was talking was a sport, I'd be an Olympian, I've often been told. So that's what I did. I went off and did a taster weekend, which was absolutely great. I came out completely buzzing, thought that's what I want to do, and embarked on an advanced integrated diploma in hypnotherapy, life coaching and NLP. It took me just short of 2 years to complete. It was done on a 2-year rolling program and I thoroughly enjoyed that and thought this is what I want to do. So like most people, most hypnotherapists, they start out as a generalist and that was great. I mean, you know, I was covering everything from weight loss and smoking and insomnia and all sorts of, especially phobias and fears and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
But then eventually, because I had an early onset menopause, I decided to go into that as a niche in actually the 40 plus woman, because I was only 41 when I went through the menopause.
Wow, that is early, isn't it?
Yeah. And I thought, right, okay, that's where I'm going. That's what I like to do. That's what I love to do, is helping women through the menopause.
And the early menopause, I mean, I hear stories about it and I know one or two people, but is it more common than perhaps we'd like to think? Is it quite a rarity for a woman in her early 40s to go through it, or is it becoming more common now?
I don't think it's becoming more common, but I do think that the perimenopausal menopause is starting earlier.
Right.
The perimenopause can actually start up to 10 years before the full-blown menopause.
Okay.
And on average, women go through the menopause around about the age of 53. So perimenopausal symptoms can actually start at 40, from sort of 43, if you like.
Okay.
And of course, I know that, I didn't know at the time. If I knew at the time what I know now, I probably would have had a very different journey.
Right.
So it's a bit like when you start going through the menopause, when you start having those symptoms, perimenopausal state, it's a bit like going through puberty for adults.
And is it a case that lots of women will go through it, perhaps in their late 30s and early 40s, and not even associate it with it being part of that process?
That's the thing. I was 41 and I had no idea that's what it was. I broke out in a face full of spots. My hair fell out. I was like, a complete she-devil. If, I got in the car and somebody cut me up, I would chase them down the motorway and want to literally, call them out because I was so angry.
Yeah.
And I didn't really know where this anger was coming from, but it would literally come from my feet and consume me. And it was only when I had a friend in the car that just said, that is not right. You really need to go and get that sorted out.
Yeah.
But even then, that didn't make me think about menopause. And it was when I had a bone density scan on my arm at a health club that they actually called me to one side and said, you have bone thinning in your arm. You need to go to the doctor. And I went to the doctor and they sent me for a full hip and spine scan. And hey presto, they just phoned me up out of the blue and said, I said, what's wrong? And they said, oh, nothing, dear. You're just going through your menopause.
Mm.
At 41, I was,
it's quite a shock, isn't it?
Yeah, it was. I felt like I'd been hit by a 10-ton bus.
Mm.
And then my friend said, oh, look, you can commit a murder and get away with it now.
And it is interesting because obviously, as you say, when you got into hypnotherapy, you were a generalist and lots of people are. And they try to be all things to all people. And some, to be fair, are quite successful, but many struggle because they are a jack of all trades.
Yeah.
And your journey has led you into becoming a specialist. You have found your niche. And
yes.
I see that as a common theme for lots of guests that come on the show, is they do start as generalists. They've had a personal experience that then takes them down a particular route where they become a specialist and the go-to person in their field. And I do commend you for that because it's not an easy thing to do. And actually finding the niche and following that narrow path can be a bit scary because you're thinking, well, I'm going to miss out on all these other people that could need my help. But you do become an expert in your field.
That's
so valuable.
Yeah, I agree.
So before we go on to talk more about the hypnotherapy, let's just talk about what hypnotherapy isn't. Because I think the media have perpetuated certain myths about hypnotherapy with dangling pocket watches and people clucking around like chickens. What are your thoughts?
Exactly.
What are your thoughts on that?
Well, I think, first of all, hypnotherapy isn't mind control. Okay. Mind control is something completely different, if you like. It's, like Derren Brown would be seen to be sort of, he's a mentalist. So, what he does, he's very good at. Mm-hmm. He's also a hypnotherapist and a magician, etc. But hypnotherapy going into hypnosis is exactly the same as going into trance. And most people go into trance not just several times a day, more than several times a day, because all trance and hypnosis mean the same thing. And it's those times when you naturally drift off, like a daydream state.
Yeah.
So it could be that you're on a bus and, you're absolutely miles away looking out of the window and you're just in, and somebody might call your name and you don't realise it. And then all of a sudden they shout a bit louder and you say, oh, sorry, were you talking to me, type of thing. Lots of people go through driving trances. They'll drive from A to B, get to B and think, God, I don't remember going through those traffic lights. Mm. Did I go through a red light? It's just a driving trance. That's all it is.
Yeah.
So it's a very normal, natural state. People say, oh, it's a phenomena, but it is actually a normal state.
Okay, excellent. So tell me more about being a solution-focused hypnotherapist. What does that mean?
That means that I concentrate on the solution. I concentrate on how to get you back to where you want to be, to the place that you want to be. So I can work content-free, which means I don't have to get you to relive any past trauma. I don't necessarily have to hear the story of your life. Sometimes it's very helpful for me, because when somebody comes to see me, it's a little bit like having to be a bit of a detective to find out exactly which approach I'm going to use and where I'm going to go and how we're going to solve this problem together. So I'm really just a facilitator in all of this. It's what this solution comes from them.
And you can work with people via Skype, can't you, and Facebook?
Yeah, absolutely. I do.
But also face-to-face as well.
Yeah, I do love doing face-to-face. I work from a beautiful log cabin at the bottom of my garden.
Yeah.
Very peaceful down there. Mm-hmm. And, it's great when you actually get to see somebody face-to-face in person because, of course, you can feel their energy. You can feel more. And for me, I just prefer to work face-to-face with somebody.
Yeah.
Although saying that, I've had fantastic results with working across Skype and across the internet too. So, you know, it does work.
Excellent. So let's go back to the menopausal ladies out there. So if they're perimenopausal or they're going through it or they're postmenopausal, being a solution-focused hypnotherapist, how do your services help these particular ladies?
Well, because everybody is different, when people come to me, we'll discuss, first of all, I normally have a 15-minute free consultation, a discovery call, if you like, over the phone to see if we're a good fit, see if we're a good match, and see if we're sort of singing off the same hymn page, really.
Mm-hmm.
And then when they come in, we talk a lot deeper. We go a lot deeper, and that's where the detective work sort of comes in, and we find out exactly what they want from hypnotherapy, where they're going and how we're going to get there.
Okay.
And that's through several different modes. You know, it's not just about getting somebody to do eyes closed hypnosis.
Mm.
There's a lot of NLP, there's a lot of life coaching in it. It's not just one thing, is putting somebody under hypnosis and telling them they're going to feel better, if you like.
Yeah, and I think the key there is that, and I have to confess, I'm not a menopausal lady. I'm sure many of you have worked that one out, but I would guess that if you're perimenopausal or going through it or you were post, to deal with those symptoms that you struggle with, you would know if you were to go to the doctors, there would be a degree of medication, shall we say?
Yeah, and to be honest, there's nothing wrong with HRT. It is if you haven't got the problem with the BRCA gene and that you've not got the cancer in your family.
Mm.
It's a personal choice. I don't because when I first started going through the menopause, I knew no different at that stage, and I went on HRT, and believe me, it was a lifesaver for me because I had young children.
Yeah,
you know, my husband thought I'd gone absolutely nuts at times, like, you know, what's happened to my wife type of thing. where Sue disappeared to. So, you know, I've been abducted by some alien and somebody else has been brought in. So I don't disagree with that HRT as such.
No.
It can be very useful to people. But if I knew then what I know now, which is more about a natural way
of
going
absolutely.
About things, then
I think the point is that medication isn't the only way.
No.
For some people it is the right way.
Mm-hmm.
But I think the realization that, you know, the menopause, as you mentioned, can last years and years and sometimes over a decade, is that dependence on medication isn't the only way.
No,
there
not.
Are alternatives out there if you are going through that.
And a lot of it does come from, you would know, the nutrition side of things.
Yeah,
nutrition plays a massive part in it, as does, you know, people, women often put on weight and stuff like that. And, of course, you know, weight gain and obesity plays a huge part in things like hot flushes and stuff like that, it's all linked. So something like exercise, nutrition and exercise, and I'm not talking about going mad and going to the gym every day and pumping iron and stuff.
Yep.
It's about getting your body moving and about eating more. And that's another thing where I come in because, of course, I address it holistically and I treat the person, not the actual issue often, if that makes sense, because I treat somebody holistically, so we find out why they're having these problems and what we can do about it.
Excellent. So tell me more about your online menopause mindset management program.
Oh, I'm so excited about this. This is going to be amazing. It starts on the 25th of February,
mm-hmm.
and we're going to be working completely, entirely online. And what we're going to be doing is I'm going to be doing lots of lives. I'm going to be doing lots of videos, group hypnosis sessions, giving people lots of written information and stuff like that. They will have access to me sort of 24/7, really, because they can contact me via, Facebook or by the social media platforms, email, by telephone, etc., text, messaging and all the rest of it. So mm-hmm. they can ask me anything that they want, and we'll address these problems together. And it's great when you've got a group, because they don't feel like they're on their own. I know that when I was going through the menopause, I just thought, oh, my God, I'm the only one going through this. Mm. And nobody else feels like I do, and nobody understands.
Particularly at such a young age as well.
Yeah, and when you've got a group of women that go, oh, my God, yeah, that's exactly how I feel, you know, et cetera, et cetera. It's sort of, you know, you've got these it's like birds of a feather flock together.
Mm. Yeah,
and you're
yeah.
all in this together sort of thing. So, you know, I run this group, the Fabulous 40-plus Women, on Facebook, and it's a great place to be. It's free. You know, people can come and join in and ask questions and get to talk to me. But the online program is going to be fantastic. It's only $24.99, and it's going to be a 6-week program, completely interactive. You know, I'm not just going to shove videos up there for you to watch and listen to. We are going to be interacting completely online.
Sounds really good, actually. And we'll mention your contact details at the end of the interview, so obviously people can contact you. But $24.99 for a 6-week program, yeah, I'd say that's extremely good value for money.
Yes.
Particularly working with someone who's been through it, been there, done that, and yeah. you know, you're not just reading it from a book; you have first-hand experience.
Exactly.
So, what about the other things that you do? So, you know, working with people on a one-to-one basis. If they don't want to be part of a group, how do you work with people individually?
Well, there again, they can just literally on my website. There is a button on there that you can actually facility to actually book a 15-minute discovery call with me, completely free of charge. And then what we do is we have a chat, make sure that we're singing off the same hymn page, and get people in, and they can obviously come to my cabin, or we can do it across Skype or FaceTime and work on a one-to-one basis. It is a completely bespoke program.
Yep.
So they will get an MP3 download personalized to them.
Okay.
They also get an emergency Skype call with me whenever they need it.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, because we're working one-to-one, it is a bespoke program. It is specifically for them, whereas the online program is more of a generic thing. People will get a lot from it, but you know, to actually work one-to-one with somebody, you're obviously going to pay more money for it, but you'll get more out of it. So.
And you're also interested in attending speaking events and being a speaker.
Yeah, absolutely. This is I've done a couple of speaking events and stuff to women, and I'm always open to going and talking to women's groups about the menopause, etc. So if anybody's out there and needs a speaker, would like me to come along, then I'd be really happy to do that.
Brilliant. So we've established that your ideal client is going to be a 40-plus woman.
Yes.
Probably 40-plus.
Oh, yeah.
So if they're perimenopausal, it could be a bit younger than 40. It could be perhaps mid-30s.
It could be. Age is not a thing. It's if they're going through that, if they're going through the perimenopause, or it could be that they've had a full-blown hysterectomy, a oophorectomy, where they've had everything taken away and it's been forced in. They've been forced into the menopause, you know, and that does happen. And you do find on rare occasions that there are females of late 20s, 30s, you know, that this has happened to, and very sadly, you know, especially if they have no children and they wanted children.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I can work with anybody that's got those symptoms. Age is not a thing. But I put 40-plus because it's more of a natural sort of age group that it happens.
Yeah, definitely. So we mentioned at the start of the interview, obviously there's a lot of hypnotherapists out there. There's a lot of generalists. Mm. Why do you believe that people should come to you, should talk to you first?
Well, you know, I have that experience of being a generalist. You know, I did all the things that most hypnotherapists do. And I think that you have to do that to find out exactly what makes your heart sing and what makes you want to go down and do that. So if you are a perimenopausal, menopausal or postmenopausal woman, then for me, If the boot was on the other foot, I would have loved to have found somebody like me that could actually help me, because I would put my trust in them, because I know that they have already gone through it. So for me, you know, it's always better. It's like people when they've if they've got a drug addiction or an alcohol addiction, it's often they'll get a better result if they go and see somebody that's actually been through that.
Definitely.
You know, I think that if you've been...
Experienced that journey.
Yeah, absolutely. Mm,
definitely. So if people would like to book that free telephone consultation with you, how can listeners get in touch with you, Sue?
They can go to my website, which is www.suleehypnotherapy.co.uk. Okay. And on the contact page, there is obviously the details where they can actually click the button and it will take them to a calendar, a diary, which will actually give them the option to click on whatever time they want to have a chat to me, and I'll call them back.
And on Facebook, if you search Sue Lee Hypnotherapy, people can follow your Facebook page and interact with you through them.
Yes, absolutely. They can do that. And also on Facebook, I have my 40 plus women group. If they want to join, they can just, search for that on Facebook, and I'll come through. They've got to answer a few questions and I'll approve it, and they can come into the group and have a chat to us.
Brilliant. So just to reiterate, your website address is www.suleehypnotherapy.co.uk, and all your social media links are on your website as well, aren't they?
Yes, they are. Yeah, absolutely.
Brilliant. Thank you, Sue. Thank you so much for coming on the show this morning. It's been really great to find out more about what you do.
Thank you, Neil. I really enjoyed it. Thank you so much.
After the break, we're going to continue our discussion about mindful eating. But until then, we have a quick song by Roxy Music, and it's Slave to Love. You're listening to the Health Matters Radio Show on Monday, the 28th of January. What a great song that is. Slave to Love by Brian Ferry and Roxy Music. So in the last few minutes of the show, we're going to have a quick chat about mindful eating. Now, we did cover this last week, but the interview with Victoria went was so good. We continued on with her, and it didn't leave me a lot of time to talk about mindful eating. So it is a topic I do want to cover because it's really, really important, because mindful eating can help you to gain control over your eating habits. So we also spoke about food cravings and food addictions on last week's show as well. So just as a quick reminder, mindful eating is based on mindfulness, which is a Buddhist concept. And mindfulness is a form of meditation that helps you recognize and cope with your emotions and physical sensations. And this will help with things like eating disorders, depression, anxiety, and other food-related behaviors as well. So mindful eating can help you in lots and lots of different ways. So mindful eating can help you when it comes to weight management and also weight loss as well. Now, if you're a dieter out there, you may well be one of the 85% of people that go on the diet and then actually lose their initial weight but gain it back and then some within a few years. And this can be linked to things like binge eating and emotional eating. And the problem with diets is they don't address the real psychological reasons and issues why you've put on weight. They just deal with often what we call VLCDs, so very low calorie diets. They're connected to shakes and meal replacements and things like that. You get a quick fix, you get a quick weight loss, but it's not sustainable, and it really doesn't deal with the psychological issues surrounding food. And it often doesn't, because these have sugar added to them. We covered sugar at the start of the show. They often don't deal with these addictions that we have to foods. We have a short-term goal. We lose a bit of weight. We think, oh, I can't carry on doing this. It's not sustainable. We go back to our old habits because those old habits haven't been addressed. And then the weight goes back on. So mindful eating can put us back in touch with true hunger. It can also help us to change our behaviours. It can help us to reduce our stress levels as well. And stress and eating are very, very closely linked. And there was an interesting study. It was a 6-week group seminar on mindful eating. But it did result in these people losing 4 kilos during the 6 weeks. They changed their eating habits. They changed the way they looked at food, the way they approached food. And they made eating a very conscious activity. Often we eat and it's automatic, or we're sitting in front of the TV, or we're reading a book, or we're on our phones, on social media, whatever. And we've lost touch with the fact that eating should be a conscious activity. We should be savouring the flavours. We should be enjoying the meals that we're eating, because, you know, in some countries, they don't have the luxury of having regular meals. So we shouldn't take eating for granted. We should make it a conscious activity. And like I say, you know, if you do that, if you make it a conscious activity, if you become very mindful about the food that you're eating, it can actually help you to break habits. It can also help you to not eat so much. It can help you with portion control. Ultimately, it can also help you lose weight as well. And it can help you with binge eating. So binge eating is when you eat a lot of food in a short amount of time and you do it mindlessly, and you often do it without that control that we've just spoken about. And interestingly, around 70% of binge eaters are actually obese as well. So mindful eating can reduce the severity and the frequency of binge eating, and it can help with these unhealthy behaviors. So we have emotional eating. So when we have a particular emotion, we connect that to a particular food. Often it's not good for you. You know, you don't connect emotional eating to eating celery. You know, you connect it to drinking alcohol or perhaps eating a big bar of chocolate. So emotional eating is a really big problem. External eating. So if we're out and about and we smell a particular food, so, you know, you might go into a supermarket and you'll smell the fresh bread, and that can trigger certain emotions, that can trigger certain hormones in your body that make you crave those sorts of food. You can walk past a restaurant and take a sniff. You can walk past a fast food outlet, take a sniff and go, oh, I quite fancy a burger or whatever. And that can drag you in and obviously make you eat things that maybe you wouldn't ordinarily eat. And these behaviours are the most commonly reported problem amongst people that are struggling with their weight. Again, if we go on VLCDs, these very low calorie diets, they just address the calorie side of the problems with overeating and carrying too much weight. They really don't deal with the deep psychological issues surrounding weight gain and weight management. So mindful eating can actually make you or can put you back in touch with genuine hunger, with genuine enjoyment of food, and it can make food and eating a much more conscious activity than just eating habitually. So how can you practice mindful eating? Now, I know people that do run seminars, there's online courses, there's workshops. If you need the support to help you get in the habit of actually the practice of mindful eating, then you can search online. There's lots of people out there that can help you. If, however, you'd like to have a go yourself, here's a few tips that you might want to consider to help put you back in touch with the food that you're eating. So number one, eat more slowly and don't rush your meals. Chew your food, enjoy the flavour. Don't see eating as an activity that gets in the way of your day, that has to be done as quickly as possible. You know, stay away from these distractions. Turn the TV off, put the book down, put the phone down, and just enjoy the moment. Enjoy the food that's been prepared for you or that you've prepared, and enjoy the flavours in the food. You know, really make it a conscious activity. Eat in silence. Music and other noise actually distracts us from eating. So if you can do, and it's not always possible if you've got children, for example, but eat in silence. Focus on how the food makes you feel and stop eating when you're full. Okay, when the flavour starts to go, that's the first trigger that you're actually full up. Don't wait until you're bursting. Ask yourself, why are you eating? Are you hungry? Is what you're eating healthy? Is it good for you? And try and pick one meal a day, perhaps, to focus on these points. Don't try and do it for every meal, but just try and focus perhaps on your main meal and put these things into practice, and you will become much more in touch with what you're eating, how much you're eating, and the activity of eating. And again, this is mindful eating for you. It's a really important part of what I do with my clients. But becoming more in touch with what you're eating and how much you're eating can help you not just to manage your weight, but also help you to eat more healthily too. So I hope you find that interesting and useful. It's been a great show. We've discussed processed foods. We had a great interview with Sue speaking about hypnotherapy and the menopause. And again, thank you, Sue, for coming on the show today.
Thank you, Neil. It's been great.
And we've just covered mindful eating as well. So on next week's show, on the 4th of February, we have Sarah Lawrence from After the Storm. So I look forward to interviewing Sarah next Monday. A quick reminder of the show's social media feed, at Health Radio Show on Twitter, the Health Matters Radio Show on Facebook. You can listen again to this show and previous shows on my media page, on my website, which is www.i-nutrition.co.uk, and you can find the show's podcast on iTunes if you search the Health Matters Radio Show. So after the last song, we have the Channel Radio News and Weather. So until the same time next week, stay happy, stay healthy, have a great week, and I will catch you again next Monday, same time, 11 o'clock on the 4th of February.
The bloom shoots up through the stony ground. There's no room, no space to